إذ يقول المنافقون والذين في قلوبهم مرض غر هؤلاء دينهم ومن يتوكل على الله فإن الله عزيز حكيم.
And recall when the hypocrites and those whose hearts were diseased said, "Their faith has deluded these believers. But he who puts his trust in Allah shall find Allah Almighty, All Wise." Their faith has deluded these believers.
Observing that a small band of resourceless Muslims was getting ready to confront the powerful Quraysh, the hypocrites as well as those who were heedless of God and cared only for worldly interests often tended to say to one another that the religious passion of the Muslims had driven them to utter fanaticism and zealotry. They were sure that the Muslims would face a total rout on the battlefield. They were puzzled by how the Prophet, peace be upon him, in whom the Muslims believed, had cast such a spell over them that they were altogether incapable of rational calculation and were hence rushing straight into the very mouth of death.
وَلَوْ تَرَى إِذْ يَتَوَفَّى الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا الْمَلَائِكَةُ يَضْرِبُونَ وُجُوهَهُمْ وَأَدْبَارَهُمْ وَذُوقُوا عَذَابَ الْحَرِيقِ.
And if you could only see when the angels took away the souls of the unbelievers, striking them on their faces and backs, saying, "Taste the torment of burning."
ذلك بما قدمت أيديكم وأن الله ليس بظلام للعبيد.
This is your punishment for what your hands have wrought. Allah is not unjust in the least to His creatures.
كدأب آل فرعون والذين من قبلهم كفروا بآيات الله فأخذهم الله بذنوبهم إن الله قوي شديد العقاب.
Their case is like that of the people of Pharaoh and those before them. They denied the signs of Allah, and so Allah seized them for their sins. Surely, Allah is all-powerful, stern in retribution.
ذلك بأن الله لم يكن مغيرا نعمة أنعمها على قوم حتى يغيروا ما بأنفسهم وأن الله سميع عليم.
This happened because Allah is not one to change the favor which He has bestowed upon a people until they have changed their attitude. Surely, Allah is all-hearing, all-knowing.
Until they have changed their attitude.
Unless a nation renders itself totally unworthy of God's favor, it is not deprived of it.
كدأب آل فرعون والذين من قبلهم كذبوا بآيات ربهم فأهلكناهم بذنوبهم وأغرقنا آل فرعون وكل كانوا ظالمين.
Their case is like that of the people of Pharaoh and those before them. They rejected the signs of their Lord as false, and so we destroyed them for their sins, and caused the people of Pharaoh to drown, for they were wrongdoers all.
إِنَّ شَرَّ الدَّوَابِّ عِندَ اللَّهِ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا فَهُمْ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ.
Surely, the worst moving creatures in the sight of Allah are those who definitely denied the truth and are therefore in no way prepared to accept it.
الَّذِينَ عَاهَدْتَ مِنْهُمْ ثُمَّ يَنْقُضُونَ عَهْدَهُمْ فِي كُلِّ مَرَّةٍ وَهُمْ لَا يَتَّقُونَ.
especially those with whom you entered into a covenant, and then they broke their covenant time after time, and who do not fear Allah.
And who do not fear Allah.
This refers especially to the Jews. After arriving in Medina, the Prophet, peace be upon him, concluded a treaty of mutual cooperation and good neighborliness with them. Not only did the Prophet, peace be upon him, take the initiative in this connection, he also tried his best to maintain pleasant relations with them. The Prophet, peace be upon him, also felt greater affinity with the Jews than with the polytheists of Mecca. As a rule, he always showed preference to the customs and practices of the people of the book over those of the polytheists. But somehow the Jewish rabbis and scholars were irked by the Prophet's preaching of pure monotheism and moral uprightness, let alone his scathing criticism of the deviations which appeared in Jewish belief and conduct. They were constantly engaged, therefore, in efforts to sabotage the new religious movement. In this respect, they left no stone unturned. They collaborated with the hypocrites, who were apparently an integral part of the Muslim body politic. To serve the same end, they fanned flames to rejuvenate the old animosities between the Aus and Khazraj, which had brought about bloodshed and fratricide in pre-Islamic times. They attempted to hatch conspiracies against Islam in collaboration with the Quraysh and other tribes. What was all the more deplorable was that they indulged in these nefarious activities despite their treaty of friendship and cooperation with the Prophet, peace be upon him. When the Battle of Badr took place, they took it for granted that the Muslims would not be able to survive the very first attack of the Quraysh. However, when the outcome of the battle dashed their hopes, they became all the more spiteful. Apprehending that the victory in the Battle of Badr would help the Muslims consolidate their position, they carried out their hostile activities against Islam even more vigorously. Ka'b bin Ashraf, a Jewish chief, went to Mecca personally and recited stirring elegies for their dead warriors with a view to provoking the Quraysh into hostile action against the Muslims. It was the same Ka'b bin Ashraf who considered the Muslim victory in the Battle of Badr such a catastrophe that he regarded death to be better than life. In his own words, "The belly of the earth has become preferable to us than its back." Banu Kenuka, a Jewish tribe in brazen violation of their agreement of friendship and alliance with the Muslims, took to indecent molestation and teasing the Muslim women who passed through their quarters. When the Prophet, peace be upon him, reproached them for this shameful conduct, they threatened the Prophet, peace be upon him, saying, "Do not be deluded by your encounter with a people who had no knowledge of warfare, and so you had good luck with them. By God, if we were to wage war against you, you will know that we are the men."
فَإِمَّا تَثْقَفَنَّهُمْ فِي الْحَرْبِ فَشَرِّدْ بِهِمْ مَنْ خَلْفَهُمْ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَذَّكَّرُونَ
So if you meet them in war, make of them a fearsome example for those who follow them, that they may be admonished. Make of them a fearsome example for those who follow them.
The verse makes it lawful for Muslims to feel absolved of the obligations of a treaty with a people who, despite that alliance, threw obligations of the treaty overboard and engaged in hostile actions against the Muslims. It would even be lawful for the Muslims to engage in hostilities against them. Likewise, if the Muslims are engaged in hostilities against a people, and the non-Muslims who are bound in treaties of alliance or friendship with the Muslims array themselves on the side of the enemy and fight against the Muslims, it would be lawful for the Muslims to treat them as enemies and kill them. For by their brazen violation of the obligations of the treaty concluded with their people, they had made it absolutely lawful for Muslims to disregard the terms of that treaty concerning the inviolability of the lives and properties of at least those individuals.
وَإِمَّا تَخَافَنَّ مِنْ قَوْمٍ خِيَانَةً فَانْبِذْ إِلَيْهِمْ عَلَى سَوَاءٍ إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ الْخَائِنِينَ
And if you fear treachery from any people with whom you have a covenant, then publicly throw their covenant at them. Allah does not love the treacherous. than publicly throw their covenant at them.
According to the above verse, it is not lawful for Muslims to decide unilaterally that their treaty with an ally is annulled, either because of their grievance that their ally did not fully observe the terms of the treaty in the past, or on ground of the fear that he would treacherously breach it in the future. There is no justification for Muslims to take such a decision, nor to behave as if no treaty bound the two parties. On the contrary, whenever the Muslims are forced into such a situation, they are required to inform the other party before embarking on any hostile action that the treaty was terminated. This step is necessary in order that both parties are clear in their minds as to where things stand. Guided by this principle, the Prophet, peace be upon him, laid down a basic rule of Islamic international law in the following words. Whoever is bound in treaty with a people may not dissolve it until either its term expires or he flings it at them. For instance, publicly declares that it had been annulled. The Prophet, peace be upon him, further elucidated this saying, "Do not be treacherous even to him who is treacherous to you." These directives were not given merely in order that preachers might preach them from the pulpit or embellish them in religious books. On the contrary, Muslims were required to follow these directives in their everyday lives, and they did in fact do so. Once, Muawiyah, during his reign, concentrated his troops on the borders of the Roman Empire in order to carry out a sudden attack immediately after the expiry of the treaty. Amr bin Anbasa, a companion, strongly opposed this maneuver. He supported his opposition by reference to a tradition from the Prophet, peace be upon him, in which he condemned such an act of treachery. Ultimately, Muawiyah had to yield and call off his troops. To annul a treaty unilaterally and to launch an armed attack without any warning was common practice in the time of ancient Jahiliyyah, ignorance. That practice remains in vogue in the civilized Jahiliyyah of the present day as well. Recent instances in point are the Russian invasion of Germany and the Russian and British military action against Iran during the Second World War. Such actions are usually justified on the ground that a previous warning would have put the enemy on the alert and would have enabled him to put up even stiffer resistance. It is also justified by saying that a military initiative has the effect of preempting a similar military initiative by the enemy. If such pleading can absolve people of their moral obligations, then every offense is justifiable. In such a case, even those who commit theft, robbery, illegitimate sexual intercourse, homicide, or forgery can proffer either one pretext or the other for so doing. It is also amazing that acts which are deemed unlawful for individuals are deemed perfectly lawful when they are committed by nations. It should also be pointed out that an unannounced attack, according to Islamic law, is lawful in one situation, when the ally has clearly violated the treaty and has blatantly indulged in hostile action. Only in such an eventuality, it is not binding on Muslims to first declare the dissolution of the treaty. Not only that, in such a circumstance, it is also lawful to launch an unannounced military action. In deriving this legal rule, Muslim jurists have drawn on the Prophet's own conduct in regard to the Quraysh, who have breached the Hudaybiyah Treaty in dealing with Banu Khuza'a. In this instance, the Prophet, peace be upon him, did not notify them that the treaty had been annulled. On the contrary, he invaded Mecca without warning. Nonetheless, while acting on this exceptional provision, one should be cautious and take into account the totality of circumstances in which the Prophet, peace be upon him, took this step. That alone will help one to properly follow the Prophet's example. For one should try to imitate the Prophet's example in its totality, rather than just one or other aspect of it, depending on one's whim. What we know from the Sira and Hadith with regard to this is the following. First, that the Quraysh had so openly violated the treaty that its annulment had become absolutely clear. Even men of the Quraysh themselves acknowledged that the treaty was no longer in operation. It is because of this realization that the Quraysh had deputed Abu Sufyan to Medina to negotiate for its renewal. This fact clearly indicates that the Quraysh were in no doubt that the treaty stood dissolved. It is immaterial whether the party which annulled the treaty verbally declared so or not, for it had been violated so blatantly that no room for doubt was left. Second, after the annulment of the treaty, the Prophet, peace be upon him, did not say anything, either in clear or ambiguous terms, which could justify the impression that he still regarded the Quraysh to be his allies or that the treaty relations with them were still intact. All relevant reports, on the contrary, suggest that when Abu Sufyan pleaded for the renewal of the treaty, the Prophet, peace be upon him, did not accede to that request. Third, the Prophet, peace be upon him, himself initiated military action against the Quraysh, and he did so openly. There was no element of duplicity or fraud in the Prophet's behavior. There was no trace of pretense to be at peace while secretly engaging in belligerent activities. This is the full picture of the Prophet's attitude on the occasion. Hence the directive of flinging the treaty in the face of the other party as embodied in the above verse. Informing the other party that the treaty had been terminated may only be disregarded in very special circumstances such as those existing then. And should it be disregarded, then this should be done in the straightforward and graceful manner adopted by the Prophet, peace be upon him. Moreover, if some disputes arise with a people with whom the Muslims have a treaty and the dispute remains unresolved, even after direct negotiations or international mediation, or if the other party appears bent upon forcing a military solution to the problem, it would be lawful for Muslims to resort to force. However, according to the above verse, force may be used by Muslims after making a clear proclamation of the annulment of the treaty, and that the action taken should be overt. To carry out military action by stealth is an immoral act and can nowhere be found among the teachings of Islam.